proximity to yesterday's parsha, directly related to how a wife was chosen for Yitzchak, and it has many ramifications in halacha, agoda, and we'll take it just from the start. But actually, the name of the shir is not our first topic. Right, Avraham told his servant, who's never named in Perek Chavdalet, but we will call him Eliezer. It's interesting, Ibn Ezra in this parsha says, we don't know who this Eved is, but in Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov tells Yosef to hold on to his thigh to promise him to bury him in Israel, he says, that was the custom of the way to take an oath, as we see by Eliezer back in Torah. So all right, it's pshat. This is Eliezer, the way the Torah describes him here in Chavdalet, Zakan Beso, Moshel Becho. It's the same person that's back in chapter 15 when Abraham says, my servant is inheriting me, and it describes him similarly there. This will be crucial to our understanding of how he set up this decision of how to choose a wife for Yitzchak. So we'll call him Eliezer, even though the Torah refers to him as Eved and Ish, back and forth, Bimadakdek, inside why it starts calling him Eved, but in the middle of the story, he reverts to his Ish, and then at the end of the story, he's back to Eved. But I begin not with this Gemara in Tainis that says the title of our Shir, but the Gemara in Maseches Chulin. The Gemara says, source number one, Kol Nachash She'eno Ke Eliezer Eved Avraham. Okay, it possibly be Nichush, but the Gemara doesn't spell it with a Vav. But Kol Nachash She'eno Ke Eliezer Eved Avraham Uchiyonus and Ben Shaul Eino Nachash. Right, the Torah says in Parshas Kedoshim, Lo Senachashu, the Torah hasn't been given yet, but the Torah says Lo Senachashu, which means do not divine. The Gemara gives two examples of Lo Senachashu, that as you're walking, an animal has something in its mouth, and the thing falls out of its mouth, and you determine that that is an ominous sign, and something you wanted to do that day you shouldn't do. Don't go into business that day, don't. This is a bad sign for you. This sounds similar to walking under a ladder or a cracked mirror or Friday the 13th or other things of this sort. The Gemara says this is kishuf, it's not allowed. Tamim tiyeh mashem alokecha, be pure with God, do not look at these omens. They're meaningless. The rest of the world takes, they take fear from these things. There are prophets in Tanakh that discuss these issues, as well as we find in this pasuk of Senachashu. So when the Gemara says, a nichush that is not like Eliezer Eved Avraham or Yonas and Ben Shaul, the first thing you want to do is, what did these two biblical characters do that smacks of nichush? So, to answer that question, we look at the title of this year. Okay, but before we even go there, we have to understand that this is a Gemara in Chulin in the context of something that has nothing to do with the laws of Nichush. If you want to know the laws of Nichush, there's a big sugi in Maseches Sanhedrin that tells you, I just quoted from it, about the animal with the food in its mouth. What is Chulin doing to teaching us about how to do Nichush? It's a whole sugi in Maseches Sanhedrin in the context of Kishuf. The Gemara discusses whether Kishuf is part of Avodah Zarah, and if it is, then a Ben Noach is Muzhar on Kishuf. Right, and it's obvious to us that of these two cases, Yonas and Ben Shaul is after Matan Torah. Eliezer of Avraham is before Matan Torah. Why should I care if Eliezer of Avraham ate treif or didn't wear tzitzis or committed nichush? All right, well, if it's part of Avodah Zarah, then I do care, because we feel that even before Matan Torah, the whole world was mitzvah on Avodah Zarah. Okay, but we can see the two examples that the Gemara in Chulin mentions. One is before Matan Torah, one is after Matan Torah. Another thing is what I said before, is that if I want to know the laws of Nichush, I should look in Maseches Sanhedrin in the seventh parak. That's where I'll find my laws. So let's now see the source that is the title of this shir. All right, I'm skipping source number two, and I'll come right back to it. Okay, I'm Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, I'm Rabbi Yonasan. You want to see it? I'm on source number three. Shlosha Shalu Shelo Kehogan. three biblical characters asked improperly of God. That's the, how not to make a deal with God. The Shnayim Heshivu Kahogan. Two got good answers. Lechod Heshivu Shelo Kahogan. One did not get a good answer. The Eluhain, here are the three. Eliezer Eved Avraham, the Shaul Ben Kish, the Yiftach HaGiladi. Eliezer, yesterday's Parsha, Shaul Ben Kish, and Yiftach. Eliezer Eved Avraham, what did Eliezer Eved Avraham do that was wrong? He did Nichush. Right? Nichush is wrong. Nichush is irrational. Because Nichush may take you to the wrong direction. I can't decide which job to take. I have two offers. I don't know what to do. So am I allowed to flip a coin to determine which one to take? Right? If there are four choices when a judge is totally unclear what to do from the evidence before him. If you just travel through the bubbles, you'll recognize all four of these. One is Yachloku. Mamon amotu b'safek Yachloku. I have nothing to do. I have to do shara. I have to, right? I just have to say split it. Two, Yehei Munach ad Shevo Eliyahu. I can't tell who's telling the truth here. Eliyahu will have to come, and at that time, everyone will tell the truth. The liar will step forth. Right? Another one is Kol Da'alim Gvar. We can't decide who is in the right here. We'll throw up our hands and say, okay, leave the boat right where it is. The stronger one will get it. Have you heard that? Kol Da'alim Gvar. The Ritva explains Kol Da'alim Gvar, which means Mistama, the one who really owns the boat, is going to work harder at getting it. So the judgment will come out properly. But finally, if none of those three apply, what's the only fourth choice the judge has? Shuda Dedaini. Shuda Dedaini. He makes up just mind his own mind. I didn't like the way his eyes shifted when he spoke. I heard that he once did some Shuda Dedaini. You should just throw it out. Shuda Dedaini. That seems to be what Eliezer is doing. How do you make a determination on this? Right? That's what the Gemara in Chulin seems to be saying, and that's how the Rambam seems to be understanding this Gemara. Because the Rambam paskins that someone who behaves like Eliezer Eved Avraham is violating Lo Sinachashu. Wow. Tosfos can't stand that. Look at source number two. You know the story in the Torah. We haven't really decided yet what could go wrong with this. What's the possibility that could go wrong? It should be obvious to everyone here, but let's see first Tosfos, which is on this, asks number, which is source number four. Right,
can we tell number four?
No, I want to do number two, I'm sorry. Okay, Eliezer Eved Avraham. V'im Tomar Eliezer Hech Nichesh Laman Domar B'Perak Ba'Arba Misos and Sanhedrin Dafnun Vavam Ebeis Kol Omar B'Parshas Mechashek Ben Noach Muzar Alav. According to the opinion that Kishuf is part is Avodah Zarah and Ben Noach is Mitzuvah and Avodah Zarah, how could such a tzaddik, if you're attending a daf, just recently in Perak Chelek, we learned what such a tzaddik Eliezer was, right? How could such a tzaddik violate his mitzvah? I think where I'd like to tweak Tosfos is, Tosfos is wondering how could, according to the Gemara, in the direct violation of a mitzvah, he's worshiping Avodah Zarah by committing nichush. How could this first shidduch in the Tanakh be so successful in light of a violation of the Torah, a violation of what that man should have been doing? Usually in the Bible, when someone does something wrong, he's punished for it. Here, this man commits a grievous sin. He commits something that smacks of Avodah Zarah, and bingo, he gets what he wants. He gets the girl, right? It's interesting, it just hits me now, the first time approaching it this way, is that Chazal say he really didn't want to be successful. He wanted Yitzchak for his own daughter, right? So, all right, I'm just saying. He says, Ulai, without the vav, so he says, Eli, Rashi. Rashi writes this down. Rashi records this. And he wanted Yitzchak for his own daughter. Right, the Shalshelis indicates the ambivalence by Yosef, by Aaron, and by Lot. So to here, it shows that he wasn't really in on it. So I think there's a better explanation why he bedaka. I think he bedafka uses nichush. You'll see why shortly. So Tosfos wonders, how could such a tzaddik, we understand Tosfos saying, how could it be so successful as a direct result of a violation? So Tosfos says, "V'yesh lomar da'hu tana savar shelo nosan lo hatzmidim ad shehigida lo bas mihi." He didn't give her the bracelets until he asked her, "What's your name?" See, if she just fulfills his plan, and then he gives her the bracelets, they say, "Oh, my plan worked. She's going to marry Yitzchak." How could you do that? What if after you ask her name and she says, "My name is Rivka Bas Besuel Knanite"? Right? Now, look, applying the rules of the third parak in Maseches Tzuvos, it talks about what's the identification of a baby that you find in a basket. Come on, he's in Aram Naharayim. He's not in Canaan. Most of the girls in this place are going to be from this place where Avram came from. Right? That's why the Gemara doesn't say, "Eliezer, what kind of deal did you make? What if she would be a Canaanite?" No, the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara just says, "What if she's not suitable for Yitzchak? Because she's blind or she's a Figueres?" All right, then you have to ask, okay, he won't go to a blind or Figueres girl. He won't give her a chance at Yitzchak. Right? All right, we'll get to that shortly. But right now, what we're saying is that if he asked her name first and then gave her the tzmidim, which appears in Rashbam, a lot of the Ashkenazic commentaries, Bochor Shor, Sefer Agan, appears in Ibn Ezra, right? They all say that if her answer was, "I am Rivka Bas Besuel the Canaanite," he'd say, "Thank you very much for the water," and maybe give her one of the coins, say thank you for your trouble, and move on. Okay, so what Rashi doesn't read it this way, because as you may know in the text, it's mixed up. When he does see her, what's written first?
He's saying that he didn't really care if it was his brother's daughter, he just wouldn't care as long as it wasn't a Canaanite.
Right, I think the fact that it's from his family is certainly an added bonus, right? This is my drasha from a few weeks ago, was that Terach is the only person in the whole Torah who has a father and a son with the same name. Nahor is his father, and he has a son named Nahor. So Rashi, so Avram knows, I think that's why Yahushua mentions Nahor, but not Haran. Right? And of course, the Haggadah quotes this in Mitzchilo Bezara, because Avram knows, as much as they're of the Avodah Zarah, good, but I'll deal with that. But they have a sense of Jewish of continuity, right? They name children after fathers. That's something that's not common in ancient world. They name children after events, not after fathers. But he saw that my family, if I can go back to Nahor's, that family, and plus you see that when Haran dies, both his brothers marry Haran's family. Not just Nahor, who marries Milcah, Haran's daughter. Abraham marries Yiska, who according to Chazal is also Haran's daughter. Yiska means princess in Aramaic. Sarai means princess in Hebrew. Same person. So you see that this idea of levirate marriage, which became popular already before Matan Torah, with you see Yehuda committing to it, right? And the Torah commands it later in Parshas Ki Tse, that what is levirate marriage? It's keeping the family. Let's keep the name. Abram sees there's something there, right? So the added bonus of her being from the family is amazing, right? The question is, how does all this happen as a direct result of an Avera? So Tosfos says, if we manipulate the original story, because you know what Rashi does with this, Rashi says that at first he was so sure of himself that he gave her the bracelets and everything first, and only then he asked her name. Tosfos says that's Max of Nichush. So I'd rather say what Tosfos. This is bizarre. Look what Tosfos writes. He writes first. He asked her name. Right. V'afal gav dichsiv v'yikacha ish nezem zohav v'hoder ksiv v'yomer bas miyat. In the original story, you all know this from Rashi, that the original story he first gave her the gifts and only then asked her name. So he says this is the bizarre part. Ein mukdam amuchar b'torah. Really, in the same pasuk? In the same pasuk? That's bizarre. Rashi didn't want to go there. Rashi, anytime Rashbam gives a pshat, I'm telling you, Rashi was aware of that pshat. Rashbam and Rashi learned Chumash together. Right? Rashbam writes it all over his parish about their arguments about pshat. Right? great scholar on Rashbam. His name is Marty Lakshin. His doctoral thesis on Rashbam claims that Rashbam was written, every Perush is meant to be something that counters Rashi, unless he agrees with Rashi, some way or another. Okay, I'm just saying. Right? Other scholars in Rashbam say he had a different agenda, but when Rashi writes something that's that's different than Rashbam, at the time that Rashi was aware of what Rashbam wrote, this, Rashi writes this, gracious Rambha, that he purposely changed the order when he's sitting at the table talking to the family, saying, I gave her the bracelets only after finding her name. Because if you're going to give your daughter up to a man who's so haphazard that he just throws out the money to anybody, you know what I'm saying? That could have been any girl. What makes you think that our daughter was special? All right, so here is what I would like to suggest. Remember about 10 minutes ago I told you it's crucial that this is Eliezer Eved Avraham. Where does Eliezer Eved Avraham come from? Emes, the capital of Aram. In Aram, you know this even from extra-biblical sources, Nichush was very big in Aram. And I don't need those extra-biblical sources, I have it in the Torah. Talk to me, where? In Parshas Vayetzeh, Lavan tells Yaakov, through Nichush, Yosef also uses the word in Egypt, right? About the cup. I know through Nichush that you, Yaakov, are responsible for everything that happened to me. That's why I'm not going to harm you. I could harm you, but I won't, because through Nichush I know that you were responsible for all the good that I have. So this is Eliezer Damas. He knows what's going to impress an Aramean family. I'm going back to where Avram comes from, and if they hear, you said that, and right away, they're proud of their daughter for being such a balas chesed, but also, this worked with them. Plus, add on to this, that Avram told him, God will send an angel before you. Whatever that means to them, right? A lot of the Ashkenazic Meforshim say that the three men who came to Avraham were three men who ate. Not angels, they're three men. A lot of the Meforshim, you know, wonder how angels eat. Right? They have Meforshim that give one way or the other. But the point is that Hashem told Eliezer, God will send an angel before you to make you successful. However, Eliezer understood that to mean he felt it means I will be successful. Even so, l'mala min ha-teva, come on. That's what Nichush is. It goes beyond teva. It's not teva to determine whether to take the job on a coin flip. It's beyond your control. Shuta d'daini doesn't mean that the judge should just flip a coin to decide who's guilty and who's innocent. Those rare cases of shuta d'daini, you know what I'm talking about, where he just throws out the answer, he still has to use some kind of evidence before him, even if it's extrajudicial, right? Okay, So here he says, Ein Mukdam Amucha. Rashi doesn't like to do this. Rashi's a close reader of the text. He's not going to do this. All right? Do you mind if I take you totally in a different place? Why was Yocheved able to hide Moshe for 3 months? Why does it say for 3 months? Why does it say she tried to hide him, and when she could no longer hide him, she. This is an interesting example. These are all. Tell me, what's in your mind? What's the first thing? 6 month baby, right? Seven. What makes you say that? She was born after 6 months. Because it's in Rashi. Yeah. It's not found any other place in Chazal but Rashi and Targum Yonah, son of the Torah. Which Rashi really didn't use. So we have to figure out where did Rashi get this. There is a Gemara that asks this question in Sotah and says she was already 3 months pregnant when he took her back. She was pregnant when he divorced her. You with me right now? When Amram divorced her. Why did Rashi reject that Gemara to say Moshe is a 6 month baby? Especially since there's a list of 6 month babies in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, and Moshe's not on that list. Rashi rejects two Gemaras to make up an answer that most of you know, because we know Rashi more than we know Medrash Rabbah. Right? Why? Because the Pasuk says, listen carefully. Vayelech ish mi beis levi, vayikachas bas levi, vatahar vatelet bein. Rashi's, because according to the Gemara, it's Vatahar, Vayelech Ish Mibeis Levi, Vayekachas Bas Levi, Vatelet Bein. Apparently, this Tosfos is Teretz here. It wouldn't mind saying that. Right, you follow it? Let me see why it's better for this little tangent. Okay, let's go back. Rashi's not going to go there. Ein muktam ma'ucha. Really? It says in the pasuk. Yeah, he say gave her the bracelets, and they said, "What's your name?" Okay, I'll admit there are some. The Sefer Hagan tries to figure in pshat why we might say that even what's written in the pasuk is beyond us right now. Right? When he's talking to the family at the table, he says that he changed the order. Rashi says, of course he changed the order. He purposely changed the order. Okay. All right. So that's what the okay. Now I just want to get off on one slight tangent on this is that when Eliezer went to test his scheme, he ran right to one girl, Yoritz, Eved. He went straight to Rivka. That doesn't make sense. If your plan is the first girl that asks, that offers me and my family, then he should have said, "Who has water for a thirsty stranger?" And then let some girls line up, and then give to the first one who also offers his camels. He ran to her. Anyone remember Rashi, what Rashi writes?
Because the water came up.
So the water come up. Now, what Rashi came to a lot of derision from the Sephardic commentaries for writing things like this. From Ibn Ezra's standpoint, from Sadia Gaon's standpoint, even if the Pasuk had said water rose out, they would have explained that in a natural way. The Sephardic commentaries tended to play down miracles, even when they're written in the Torah. And the Ashkenazi commentaries allowed for miracles even when they're not written in the Torah. Right? How does water come up? By the way, Rashi says this about Yaakov and Vayetze and Moshe and Shmos, because all three have something in common. Other people are at a well, and the Torah uses that they are shoavos, or shoavin mayim. And when these three characters get the water in the question, it doesn't use that verb. You get it? The others who are at the well have to shoav mayim, to drop a pail into the water and then bring it up, right? They don't, because the water comes to them. But just the tamaleas kadosh. After she serves him, then you see the word sha'av. But originally, it doesn't say that she's doing what everyone else has to do, because the water rises up to her. That's a shot explanation why Rashi wrote this perish. Not to explain why he ran after her, that's circular reasoning. He ran after because he saw the water rising up out of the water. Why did Rashi record such a medrash? That answer is what the Mefarshim say about Shin Aleph Bet. So then all the Ashkenazic Mefarshim, there's so many of them that write the Das Kin Bavei Tosfos, Peir Zakenim, Hador Zakenim, and Moshe Zakenim, Tanei Achroza, and the Sefer Hagan, the Rokeach, Sefer Chassidim, all these Perushim that are really, much of it are commentaries to Rashi. So they all ask, so why did he have to fulfill his test? She's Mulumedes Benissim. This girl's perfect for him. So this is an interesting Musar. Is that even if she is doing something miraculous, now that could be understood in a deeper sense, that she looks perfectly suited for the family. What did we see in the beginning of Vayera? Vayoritz, Vayimaher, right? For strangers. What did we see in the beginning of Perek Chavdal? Vatoros, Vatzimaher. Perfectly suited for this family. Right? Avram's going to love this girl. Right? Okay? So this is the she's miraculous. She's perfect. Right? You know, a single guy, set up a guy with someone in the shul, and he comes back after the first date. I want to marry the girl already. She's amazing. We share everything in common. I say, okay, good. Now make sure she's a balas chesed. Go on a few more dates, make sure that she shares your vision of chesed. No matter how miraculous she brings up water from the well, first check chesed. So then Rashi's not satisfied with that. You can't build a house on just chesed. Rashi says he gave her 10 coins, 2 bracelets, and a earring weighing a beka. What does Rashi say that symbolizes? Again, to great derision of the Sephardim. Poems they wrote about Perushim like this of Rashi, saying, I throw all the Perushim of this is Medrash Rabbah that doesn't belong in your Perush that you say is shot. It belongs in a book that says nice stories to tell your children before they go to bed on the parasha. It doesn't belong in your Perush that you say, Anilo Basi Elab Shutu Shalmekra. He gave her these coins and shine, right? But Rashi doesn't work that way. That's why Rashi was so popular. Rashi says, in Pshuto Shalmekra, I'm explaining this is too much information. The Torah should just say he gave her gifts, and then there's more where that came from if you come with me. Instead, Rashi says that it means, no, if if you come with me, a descendant in you, of you and my master's son will
Seres
Adibros on two luchos and build a mishkan with a beka. Why does the Torah have to tell me how much that earring weighs? Who cares? Right? It's too much information. Right? Rashbam was very critical of Rashi on these examples of too much information. Right? Rashi says on the pasuk, "Vayefshitu et Yosef et kutanto et ktone tapasim asher olav." Surely that word et kutanto is extraneous. Right? Which ktonet? Oh, the ktonet hapasim that was on him. So Rashi says they stripped him of two coats, an outer coat and the one his father made him underneath. Right? Rashbam says, come on, it's ktonet. Which ktonet? Below asu kasher diber olein melech Mitzrayim. They didn't listen to what Paro said. That already means they let the boys live. So what do you have to tell me again? So Rashi says that the last three words must teach me more. Any repetition of what I already know has to teach me something more. Right? Okay? So, why are you telling me how many coins he gave her? How many bracelets? How much the earrings weighed, if not to teach me? All right, I tested her on Chesed already. Now I got to test her on Torah. And I go. Get it? Luchos. And the Mishkan. Now, now she accepted Torah and Avodah, and she already proved Chesed. Now I'll take her home. All right, that's a deeper meaning of Rashi. Okay, if I had Rashi here, I'd ask him, Rashi, do you really believe that Eliezer was talking to him about the Torah, was talking to her about Torah and the Mishkan? I don't know. And when it comes to Midrashim, Zichar, you should know all the Rishonim say. When the Medrash says that Cain and Hevel were fighting over where to build the Beis HaMikdash, over an extra girl, or the land and the movables, it means that all wars forever will be fought of one of these three things: religion, love, or power and property. It doesn't mean I was there listening to them fight. No one says that. I shouldn't say no one says that, but all the Rishonim write, really, the Meiri, Sefer Eshkol, Sefer Shmuel HaNogid, the Rambam, the Ramban, they all write that. That's the original memra didn't mean to say I was there listening to Cain and Hevel fight. All right? So Rashi wants to teach what to look for when building a home. Test for Torah, but I'm not saying that the woman on the date should give him a faher and chosh mishpat, but you should know that there's a commitment to the three pillars of the world, and we learn it from the shidduchim that are mentioned in the Torah. Simple enough. All right? Next. So this is on Eliezer. So let's go back to source number three. Right? So Eliezer Eved Avram Dichsiv Yohana Ro Sheramare Leo Hatino Kadech Yochol Afilu Chigeres Afilu Sumo. If she's blind or crippled. The Tosfos says that just don't go to a blind or crippled girl. What's the kasha of the Gemara? It doesn't say Mamzeres or Eved like it says by Shaul, because there is no Mamzeres or Eved yet. It's before Mount Torah. There's no such restriction on marriage now. She's freer and she's fine. Okay, so it says Figueres or Suma. So Tosfos suggests maybe she's wearing a wooden leg and you can't tell. Right? Maybe she's very very far, but she can see enough to. Here's a fetch. In other words, what kind of kasha is this? Don't go to a girl. Right? He went to he chose the girl. Right? He didn't let girl step forward and come to him. All right, anyway, but that's what the Gemara says. So what did he get? He got a good answer. Right? Yeshivu kahokin, v'niz damdun l'rivka. Okay? Finished? All right, so this will, Tosfos in number four, I just read the second Tosfos in number four. The first Tosfos wonders, and I'm going to just quickly dispense of this, wonders why the Gemara didn't mention a fourth case, which would be Kolev ben Yefuneh. Did the same thing as Shaul ben Kish, but first let's look at the Gemara. It says, what was Shaul ben Kish's problem? He said that for the man who kills Goliath, right? V'hayah yish asher yakenu, yasrenu hamelech eser, osher gadol ve'esbito yitain lo. I'm back in number three. What was Shaul's problem? Now, technically speaking, although Tosfos doesn't ask this, this is Shaul didn't offer this. David heard soldiers saying this. The assumption of the Gemara is that the soldiers were not lying. the soldiers were telling the truth. Okay, it's hard, you know, I could stand on a kasha and say after David killed Goliath, Shaul did not give that a daughter to him. Right? It was only for killing 200 Plishtim and bringing their arrows that David got the second daughter. Right? We're just assuming that the soldiers that David overheard said, this is not Shaul quoting. We quoted Eliezer, the first girl that does this, but this is not a quote of Shaul HaMelech. You can tell by the quote. Right? It's someone else saying this in the name of the king. Maybe that soldier was lying. Right? Anyway, we're assuming that soldier told the truth. The one who kills this giant, the king will make very wealthy, and he gets to marry the king's daughter. What if that man's a look read the Gemara? What if he's a mamzer? If he whoever the feel a mamzer? Shivuk Ogun Mizdama no David. Not so fast. David's a Moabite, right? Not so fast. He's a lot of equivalents of a mamzer. Alright? I'll get back to that in a minute. I'll get back to that. So Tosfos number four, the first Tosfos asks, wait, there's another story like this. Olev Ben Yefuna said, whoever conquers Kiryat Sefer gets to marry my daughter also. Mentioned twice in Tanakh, once in the Moshua, once in the beginning of Shoftim. So why wasn't this included? So Tosfos gives a whole big teretz why the case of Kolev isn't like the case of Shaul. Because the case of Shaul, yeah, it could be a strong mamzer, a strong eved could kill Goliath. But it could never be that a mamzer or an eved could conquer Kiryat Sefer. Why? Because what does the Gemara in Temura say? The conquest of Kiryat Sefer, right, was not just conquering that city. It's a drash. It's not the simple shot of the stories, sure.
But it's Torah.
The drash is that he had to resolve the sfekos that came to Klal Yisrael after Moshe's death. So someone who could resolve those sfekos, right, could never be a mamzer.
Why not?
So right, why not? Says Eved to mamzer Talmud Chacham Kodim Kohen Gadol Amaretz. In the Mesefes Horios, why not? So that's why. You find I have a source here. I don't know why they put it in as far as Michlol Hamamarim or Pitgamim, but it's a psikta. The psikta said, "Dalin Shalu Shelo Kahovin." The question is about how old the psikta is, but it's certainly older than Tosfos. There is a psikta that says four men asked improperly of God, and it includes Kalev. For offering his daughter for the conqueror of Kiryat Sefer. I'm just saying. Okay. Tosfos probably wasn't aware of this psikta. Or, even if you are aware, it's still a kasha on the Gemara. Why didn't the Gemara include this for? The Gemara knows this story. There are gadatas in Chazal about this story with Achsa, that all the other women were kasa because of how wonderful she was. There are Gemaras in Megillah about her. All right, so I'm just putting it out there. Let's go to see the fourth. What's the fourth case? That didn't go well. So I'll get to that very shortly. But David's problem is, and I need a lot more time here, but is number five, is that David's great grandmother was a Moabite. So he had the halachic equivalent of a mamzer. Even 10 generations, both by mamzer and by Ammon and Moab, 10 generations. Okay, so I would ask you, I see that a lot, I recognize a lot of the faces. Last year, I gave this the Kol Yom Rishon, I spoke about sugyas in Maseches Yevamos that impact stories in Tanakh. So we covered this whole thing about Boaz and Ploni Almoni, if you right. But David's status as someone who could possibly marry the king's daughter, or even better, someone who could possibly marry any woman, right? He says, "I'm going to get to this." I said, whoever kills this man marries my daughter. She can't marry him. His grandmother was a Moabite. It says, Le'yavam anu Moabit b'kal Hashem. So remember, after he killed Goliath, he said, Ben Mizehanar. Who's this kid's father? He didn't say, Mizehanar. He knew who the kid was. David had been playing harp for him for some time. David's been living in the palace for months. And now he asks, Ben Mizehanar? So he says, in the Gemara, in the second paragraph of the Sefer Sanhedrin, and Perikah Orel, discusses that his real question was, can I give my daughter to him? Right? So the Gemara in Tainus says, oh, Nizdam Nalo David. Because that's the conclusion of these two Gemaras. But along the way, it wasn't so poshut. It wasn't decided until now. Didn't Boaz decide this? Not so fast. The Medrash in Rus Rabba, very old Medrash. Rus Rabba is considered one of the oldest, even older than Bereishis and Vayikra Rabba. One Rus Rabba says that Boaz died the night he married Rus because he shoved the halacha through too quickly. They didn't have a chance to really work this through. He called the 10 men together. We learn Birchas Chasnim from this, but he called the 10 men to publicize that this woman is to be treated differently. Because I'm saying that I have it on a good Mesorah that we treat the men and women of Moab differently. That the women may join the Kehillah immediately. She converted herself. They don't have to wait 3 generations like Edom and Mitzrayim. They can join immediately. Right? Remember in last week's parsha, that when the angels came to Abraham, they said, "I saw Yishtecha," and he said, "Never oil." So that the Kiddush Arim says that it, to me, is the most inconsequential dialogue in the whole Tanakh. Who cares? Just go and tell him what came for. We have to ask, "I saw Yishtecha, never oil." Right. So the Kiddush Arim says something beautiful, and then we'll move on to Shaul and Yiftach. He said to Yiftach. He says that when Abraham let the angels go, it was Kichom Hayom. When they came, how long did it take for that whole story? All right, depends on the time of year, but when they came to Lot, it was Lifnos Erev. Now the Pashtunim say they purposely came to Lot at night so you wouldn't get into trouble for bringing them in. They wouldn't see in the streets. But the gracious Rabbah, and Rashi quotes this in Parshas Vayera, that Hashem purposely told the angels to delay their move to Sodom in order for
Avram to negotiate.
Avram to have time for his negotiation. Right? So God tells the angels, hold off. So the two angels say, why? Let's get the business done already. More people will be murdered anyway. So they say, no. I have two predos in there. One is
Rus,
and the other is Naamah Ha'amonis. Tachta l'moserai, in Yibamas. Is Rus there and is Naamah there? One daughter and the other daughter. Naamah is the wife of Shlomo that produced the next king. Chava's mother was not born Jewish. So I need time for those two. So the angels say, Yibam Shalom. I know Lova Shemayimi, but it says in your Torah, Lo Yavoa Moni Umoavi B'Kal Hashem. So Hashem says, no. There's going to be someone later in history. His name is going to be Boaz, and he's going to darshan to differentiate between the men and the women. Until then, there was no such differentiation. And Ploni Almoni, smart of Shmuel Hanavi, had to write this book in order to justify David in the eyes of the people, because Shaul thought, why do I have to kill him? Let me just publicize to everybody that he can't marry my daughter. He can't marry a Jewish woman. How is he going to become king? Right. So Shmuel, who had already crowned him king some months back, is in the quandary. The current king is sending out cold Korei to everybody that this man is the halachic equivalent of a mamzer, and I crowned him king already. Why did you? Right, Shmuel knew that when he told him to go to Yishai's house. Now he said, oh good God, you're paskening. I see, it's Moabi or Moabis by telling me to go to a grandson of a Moabite. Right? So Shmuel is smart. He puts in the story opposition, rejection. He didn't have to put in that there was a man who didn't want to marry her, Penashkis Nachosi. He puts it in to show that, yes, there was opposition, but the Gadol Ador responded to it. They settled it in front of 10 men. They rushed it through, says Rus Rabba, but okay. But he got the job done. But it wasn't concluded. It wasn't, if it was conclusive, then they would have known by David's time, right? So the angels say, what's the point? Well, God, do you say, really, Moavi or Moavis? What's the reason for making such a differentiation? In the Gemara in Perka Orel, there's a whole machlokes. Remember, between Yitro HaYisraeli on David's side, and between Avner and Shaul on the other side. And the Gemara goes through all these the Chedushim says, beautiful, he says, that God told the angels, let me tell you why we differentiate between the men and the women. We shouldn't punish the women of Moab and Ammon for not doing what we wouldn't expect them to do in the first place. Don't punish, only punish the men for not greeting us with bread and water, right? Because that's the way of men. It's not the way of women. And the angels say, God, how do you know that?
Because Sarah was both help.
Go down and make a test yourself. You're right. Lova Shemayimi. I'm not going to paskin whether we should differentiate between the men and the women. That's going to be for Boaz and his Beis Din. That's going to be for Shaul and Avner. That's going to be for Yisrael, Israeli, etc. Let the people of earth have to paskin that. But if you want to know whether you should give time for Avram to negotiate, go down and make a test. So they went to this dialogue, Aye Sari Shtechi, Neba Ohel, justifies the Davidic dynasty in Moshiach. It's not irrelevant dialogue. This is the most important dialogue in the Torah. You hear it? You got it? Aye Sari Shtechi, Neba Ohel. Oh, she's not coming out to greet strangers with bread and water. So now, Mahamon and Moab, the Ammonites and Moabites women are Sheros. Everyone get this, right? Okay, moving on. So Shaul considers that David has this hachalacha. This is source number 5. I just went through this whole source number 5 on the outside. Okay. All right. So let's move to Yiftach at the time that remains. You can see on some of these sources we just did all these sources on the outside, and now let's do Yiftach. Okay. Yiftach, the battle with Ammon is not going so well, and he makes a deal with God. God, listen. First thing that comes out of my house, right? Read it inside, source number 11. Vatiel Yiftach Ruach Hashem V'Yavoras HaGilad V'Smenasha V'Yavoras HaMitzvah Spell Yud and Spell Gilad Avar V'Nei Ramon V'Yidar Yiftach Neder L'Hashem V'Yomer Im Nason Titein Es B'Nei Ramon V'Yodi. Here's the critical pasuk, Lamed Aleph. V'Hayah HaYotzei Asher Yetzei Midal Sei Beisi L'Korsi B'Shuvi B'Shalom That first thing that comes out of my house, I'm going to bring up as an offering. Now, of course, when he said that, he assumed that that first thing would be a sheep. Okay. Now, the Gemara back in Tainus gave us the worst case scenarios for all three. We'll go back to that shortly. The Ramban in source number 12. It's at the end of Vayikra. Talks about the power of a cherem. Because at the end of Vayikra, it talks about the cherem. How to be machrim. The Ramban discusses why did they kill Achan? There's no death penalty on stealing. What did they kill Achan for? In Sefer Yeshua, you all know what I'm talking about, right? The death penalty is on the Zohar, Gilui Raish, Kustamah, but not anything else. Very famous about our law code is that in the ancient Near East they did kill for stealing, and we don't have any death penalty. So why did they kill him? Why did the brothers at least open up to Yaakov and say, one of them, all those years, what happened with Yosef? Because they put a cherem. A cherem, he wants to show why a cherem is so powerful. Right? So in the end he explains why Yiftach felt he had to fulfill his oath on his daughter. His daughter didn't even know what the oath was. When he saw that his daughter came out of the house first, he looked at her and said, well, they're all celebrating. She's coming out with macholos and tambourines. And he looks at her and says, oh, no. Oh, no, he puts these pias Hashem, hello, chalo, shuv. And it's because of you. And she's, Daddy, what are you talking about? You're going to be the next, you're the next leader. You're a hero. What did I do anyway? And then he told her, she didn't even hear what the neder was. She just said, Dad, if you made a neder, you better keep it. Because this Ramban says things like that from leaders are very important.
Why wouldn't an animal come out of the house?
What? Not our houses, but in that time, the dogs and cats and other things walk right out, right? All right, so in sheep, I don't know. So it may maybe mean the chotzer, I don't know, but you're right, it does seem a little bizarre. But he was impetuous. You see that he's impetuous. We didn't say such a thing like this. Make another neder. I'm going to give 100 shekel or something. I don't know. But he says so. He gets into trouble, and it's not quite clear what he actually did with this girl. It just says he kept his neder on her. And when it says that, look back at source number 11. It says when he kept his neder on her, right? She says, Daddy, let me just go for a few months with my friends, right? And to mourn what you're going to do for me. What you're going to do to me. Right? That's Pasuk Lamed Zayin. And it says, I will mourn for the fact that I died of a Sula. I never knew a man, and I never had children. And it's a really terrible way to go. Right? I'm your only child. Right? You're not going to have grandchildren. Right? So it says, it reminds us in the next three psukim, even after telling us already, it tells us two more times she never got married, she never knew a man, she died of a sula. What is all that? Why does it have to tell us that? It's tragic that he killed his daughter as a korban, whether she was a basula or not. What is this tragedy of that fact that she was a basula? The English translation is right below it. So Ramban, in the context of this discussion, tells us something I don't know from the Torah. Ibn Ezra has one parish to Vayikra. He has two parishim to Shmos and one to the other four books. And at the end of Vayikra, he doesn't say this. And I don't have a parish to Ibn Ezra on Sefer Shoftim. He probably wrote one, and we don't have it. Okay, but Ramban quotes Ibn Ezra on why Yiftach felt he had to do this to his daughter. And he says, Va'alti, a fourth line you see on page 4, Va'alti yet nifte behavlei Rabbi Avraham. Do not be seduced by the foolishness of Ibn Ezra explaining what happened in this story. What is that? Ha'omer ki perush v'ha'alisihu olah. Oh, v'ha'alisihu olah. In other words, that Yiftach's oath to God was not the first thing that comes out of my house I'll make holy to God and send up as an olah. No. I'll make holy to God if it's a person, and I will make it an olah if it's an animal. This seems to be the pashtus of the Gemara, by the way. Let's go back to our original source. Why? Because when the Gemara gives all of the worst case scenarios, remember? Eliezer, how could you be such a fool? You make a deal like this? What if a Suma or a Chigeres would come out? That's the worst case scenario. Right? Tosfos discusses why not mention Eved and Shifcha and Mamzeres. And it says, Shaul, what are you doing? First person who kills Goliath. What if it's an Eved or a Mamzer? What does the Gemara say about Yiftach? Take a look. First thing that comes out of your source number 3, the last line. The first thing that comes out of your house you're going to offer as a korban? Yachol afilu davar tameh? Really, Yiftach? You're going to offer a pig, a dog, a camel to God? What should the Gemara have said if it's interested in all the worst case scenarios? What actually happened? You don't need to use your imagination even. Doesn't the Gemara know that worse than a Dover Tomei actually did walk out? There's no death penalty for offering a pig to God, but there certainly is a death penalty for offering a human to God. Right? That's why this is here in Tainus, because the Gemara talks about Lotzivisi, Velogibaritiva, talks about the Kedis Yitzchak, the Moabite king who offered his son up to God, and this story. Right? This is the tangent of why it's here. Right? So. Doesn't the Gemara know that the worst case scenario is a person coming out? Unless the Gemara means to tell us, like Ibn Ezra, that no, it was never part of his oath to offer a human being. He said it'll be holy unto God if it's a person. So Ramban says, you're wrong on two parts, Ibn Ezra. First of all, your statement is heresy. Second of all, your statement is disproven from Shmuel and Navi. Can you answer the second question for me first? What does he mean? You're wrong because of Shmuel HaNavi. Because when Shmuel was, his mother predicted what she would do if God gives her a child, she uses the same lashon. I will make this child holy unto God. He didn't have to go to a mountain where people would mourn for him and he'd live in seclusion. You see, at the time of Ramban and Ibn Ezra, to consider that the ultimate in holiness is to move to a hermitage and never get married and not have anything to do with other people was a profoundly Christian idea. It's heretical to think this. In defense of Ibn Ezra, it's not the biblical text that's saying that this is what holiness is. It's Yiftach. And if the Gemara can imagine, the Gemara says he did this, that he actually slaughtered his daughter on, slit her throat, went through the whole Akedah with his daughter, right, in order to fulfill his vow. It's not the Torah telling us that holiness is in seclusion. like those who lived in hermitages or in cloisters, right? It's Yiftach making the mistake. You're mistaken, Yiftach. You make your daughter holy without sending her away to live in seclusion. You hear it? So I'm just trying to defend Ibn Ezra on this. I'm puzzled why Chazal are okay with Yiftach slaughtering his daughter and actually killing her, right? When Ramban's not okay with her sending her, him sending her away to live in seclusion to fulfill Kadosh Lashem. You hear it? So that you see, it looks on the face of it, Ali Siyu Allah is defining Kadosh Lashem.
There's no role for Brendan then.
No, Kadosh Lashem would be all right.
Today it could be a Rabban.
Okay, but it could be a lot of different things that could fulfill the men and women being holy. All right, so what I would say is that we see what's interesting. If this is so, that the three that work well all involve. I'm using that as a pun, because all the shidduchim in the Torah made it wells, right? A well is a be'er, right? So there are three types of ways to get water. You can get it from a spring. You can build your own bore, or you can have it from a be'er. A be'er has to, like the next week's parasha, has to work on, you have to get natural water running underground. You have to tap into it. A be'er is just running water. You don't have to do anything. Just go and grab it. Put it in the kli. A bore, you have to make totally yourself. The fact that all three shidduchim in the Torah made it a be'er means it's min hashamayim, the water is there, right? But you have to do the shtavos. You have to build something around it. Don't marriage is not like a bore, and it's not like a spring. Right? You get it? It's a mayon is a spring. You just have to just grab the water. The shidduch is not going to come up right up to you. You have to do some shtavos. But understand, right? Ibn Ezra, it's amazing. In last week's parsha, he says the reason why Abraham begins by only saying Elokei Shamayim, whereas earlier he said Elokei Shamayim Baaretz. Ibn Ezra, Rashi writes, because he's describing an earlier period where God was only king of God in the Shemayim. Now I've made God in the Shemayim and Eretz. Good shot. Ibn Ezra says something even more esoteric. He says that the reason why Avram just says Elokei Shemayim by instructing to get a wife is because he writes, everybody knows that in order to find the right person to get married, it's all in the hands of God. That's why he just said Elokei Shemayim to Eliezer in finding his wife. But don't you see? The three that work out well, and I'm including Kolim in this, with Achsa, are the three that have to do with getting married. Here at the well here, we put Nishtavus, he knows what's going on with the families, he knows what Nichush is, right? So the Ram just says, the reason why he was so successful is because Maseches Chulin isn't telling me he's violating Nichush. The same is true about Yonah's son, we can get into that. This is the way that Nichush works. If he had said the first girl that comes out wearing white and one other color, that'll be for Yitzchak. That's random. Right? That's like determining what you're going to do later today by whether you see the first car you see in the street is a domestic car or a foreign car. Those things are out of your hands. Right? Don't get me started on the Goral HaGra. I think the reason why the Goral HaGra works is because any question you want to ask me, open up any page of Tanakh, I'll find you a good answer. Right, and if you think that it's going to be on the seventh page, that just works better to make your mindset feel that someone with enough understanding of what's on the page will find what to do. Otherwise, it seems random. Right, we're supposed to put things into our own hands. When it comes to getting married, you have to have a partnership with Kodesh Baruch Hu to, like a be'er, to tap into the water that's there, and then put in our hishtadlus as well. The one that doesn't work well is where it involves not marrying, right? At least according to Ibn Ezra, right? I just want to defend him against the Ramban that he's not saying Chas v'Shalom that the Torah agrees with that Christian outlook, but that Yiftach made the mistake. According to the simple Pshat, he made a much bigger mistake of killing his daughter. Right? Okay. Any questions?
The
the minhag at the time is to give a gift. You have to give sivlonos and then gifts to someone to
move it along,
move things along. So I said the pshat. I'm saying there's more where this came from. If you come with me, so that certainly impressed. If not for Rivka, it impressed Lavan and Yisua and his mother. So you see that Lavan saw the gifts and he ran. You know, right? And you see that in Parshas Vayetze as well. So that didn't work. Yes. Went to a city called Nahor, right? Even on Kedekach, they just felt that I'm more likely to find someone who is from the family. Is the next Rebbe here? I don't want to go over time. Is it okay if I could keep taking questions until he's here?
Yeah. You could just end it, and then if you want, so people can get the reference and take questions at the front.
I'll just close with this then.
Actually, so upset that Eliezer asked Shalom Kahoged because he knew that he asked Kahoged his own personal interest and his daughter would affect his choice.
Right.
So he deliberately chose something.
We alluded to
Shalom Kahoged, but he deliberately chose it this way to work against his own bias.
Yeah. No, look, he prays. He prays. Amazing, amazing midah. He prays for this to succeed, even though he has to gvaldika midah. Pray for something that you want to fail, but you said this is my mission for Avram. So yes. Okay, Shkoyach Rebbe. Thanks.
I'm not sure if he really wanted to fail. I think he was very faithful. And it seems that it was my second time, because it was a majority.